Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You get our son!
Happy birthday, Polly.
Oh, no, I got me some. Well, how's the Joker, baby?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Bars, episode 384. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trollballins, Free Guy, Emmanuel Shrieky. That's what we're doing today. We have an interview with Sloan herself.
What was her last name in the show? McQuiddick or something? Or was it McKinnick? I don't remember.
Chappaquiddick.
Sloan Chappaquiddick.
So let's see. Sloan from Entourage.
Entourage is a word, by the way, that I've struggled with my whole life. And it's so easy to spell, but I always fuck it up.
Sloan McQuick.
That was close.
Well, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But now I'm on the Entourage wiki. Entourage.
What's like wiki. The subcategories? Is it like characters, events, movies? Like what's the...
Does any character get their own? Yeah, does any character get their own subheading?
Well, okay. So under this, the characters, like the main characters, is Vincent Chase, Johnny Drama Chase, Eric Murphy, Turtle doesn't even get his, like, Johnny Drama Chase gets his nickname in the quotes or whatever.
Imagine you told people that, you're like, who's your favorite Entourage character? I love Johnny Drama Chase.
Johnny Drama Chase. But no, it's just Turtle, Ari Gold. Melissa Gold gets her own, which is kind of weird because who is the assistant?
Lloyd.
Yeah, he was a more major character than Ari's wife was. Even though I think Ari's wife was one of the best characters on the show, played by Perry Reeves. She was fantastic. Like the one grounding force in the Entourage universe. Anyway, then you get the cast, Adrian Grenier.
Yeah, wait, how do you say it? Because I've always said Grenier, and then I heard Grenier, but I don't like that.
I always thought it was Grenier, but like it feels like a dick way to say it.
I've been corrected multiple times saying it's Grenier, but I always said Grenier.
I mean,
it makes sense.
He's like one of the few celebrities I've actually seen in person.
I think you've told this story.
Well, there's no story.
Wait, tell it again. I don't remember.
I just saw him when I was somewhere one time.
What did he do?
He was like an airport. He didn't do anything. He was just being a guy, a person. He was just being a person going about his business.
Grenier.
Who was it? You said you met like a football player once or something, right? Like Bo Derek. I don't remember. That's not
Bo
right.
Bo Derek, the famous football player.
Yeah. Well, Bo.
Hall of Famer Bo Derek.
You mean Derek Thomas? I met Derek Thomas when I lived in Kansas City at a Price Chopper. He was just out. He was out shopping for groceries.
Bo Derek Thomas was the guy I was thinking of. Yes.
And I was with my dad. My dad was like, "Hi." I was like, "That's Derek Thomas." And then, you know, like, I don't know like exactly what happened, but I'm sure it was like an awkward, "Oh, I'm a big fan" or whatever. Cause we were big fans. We live in Kansas City and the Chiefs are huge there. But like when you meet a athlete as a kid, you might as well just be meeting like God himself.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, especially somebody like Derek Thomas, but it was really cool. I remember he was very nice to me. He was wearing like a cool leather jacket.
Ooh, well, what's the name in this?
93 or something like that. Maybe 92.
Was that Cowboy or Al? I think it was Alabama.
Big rest in peace.
Yes. Was it Bo Scarborough? Who's that running back from Alabama that like who's too big and he just didn't pan out in the NFL? Like it was kind of recent, probably the last 10 years. Is it Scarborough? Am I making
nobody,
that up?
Nobody's as big as Derrick Henry. I mean, Scarborough was he was a running back. He still plays. He's on the Raiders.
He's on the Raiders now. Okay.
He was on the Lions. Most of their running backs are still in the Trent Richardson's the only one not in the NFL. Mark Ingram retire? I know he kind of got squeezed out of the Ravens last year. I forget.
I thought there was a running backs that I thought there was a
he's in the Texans now. How about that?
Running backs.
Oh, good for him. Did Frank Gore retire, or just did he get in 1 year contract with someone?
Mark Ingram cannot be the number two. That does not work. Mark Ingram is a beefy back. He can't be the number two.
Number two, what?
Like all time Crimson Tide running back or something, or what?
No, like his number now in the Texans is the number two.
Oh no, come on!
He's way too beefy of a back.
I can't do that.
That's gonna take me a bit to get used to.
A lot of the new numbers are tough. Yeah, football's on today.
It's gonna be like three games in. I'm gonna be like, okay, this is.
His name is Mark Valentino Ingram the second.
Oh, it's just cool. Mark Valentino. Actually, that's a closer name. That's not a good running back name, I don't think. I was thinking for a split second, maybe do like Mark Valentino as a running back name, but right in that instant, just doesn't work. That's a baseball name.
Who are all the Saban running backs, right? You have Ingram, Henry. Oh, Eddie Lacy.
Eddie Lacy.
Yeah.
Oh, Eddie Lacy. Is that who you're talking
China
about?
China food man. No, I think it was Scarborough I was talking about, but I guess he wasn't as big as I remember. I just
that TJ Yeldon.
TJ Yeldon
was one that I think.
Kenyon Drake.
Was it Yeldon and on the Jags, right? With what's his name? The Michigan guy that was on Madden 14 or NCAA 14.
Denard Robinson.
It was them two, right? On the Jaguars at the same time. And yeah, and they were like, yeah, they're going to be like a crazy duo. And they like did okay for 3 seconds. And they also had like a random chunky white running back that I think went to the Vikings. Toby Gerhart. Yeah, wow, what a pull. Great pull.
Toby Gerhart was a legend. That was during the Stanford revival.
Yeah, that's right. He was on the Luck and what was the tight end's name? Kobe Fleener. Yeah, yep. He was on that team. Yeah. I can always remember like 50% of any given fact in my brain and never get the full 100.
Our football talk has to be so painful to anyone who is like an actual big football fan.
My football knowledge can go up toe to toe. I know my football.
But all it takes is like one person like me who's like who's that football player that used to play for the Colts and the Broncos? Who's that guy? Oh, Peyton Manning.
Congrats to you, by the way. He was in the Hall of Fame. He got enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
Big, yeah, obviously a big personal accomplishment.
As a Colts fan, that's big for you.
Okay, so I do need to say, like, Ken Jack sent me two gag gifts for my birthday. And no, they're both very good. Ken Jack loves to get me T-shirts. And the first T-shirt he got me came in the mail, and it was a Carson Wentz shirtsy. And this was maybe 3 days after the Carson Wentz news that he was going to be out from like 2 to 37 weeks or whatever that range was that they gave. And then the second one, I got to pull this up.
Which is like, he's not, he's going to play now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not following it.
Yeah. You were when Andrew Luck retired, you hung up your Colts fandom.
I'll be back. I'm extremely fair weather now. I feel like with the fandom, I put in my time, you know, obsessively creating Excel spreadsheets of all the players and tracking them like when I was 17 and was a big fan from about 17 through 25 and then was like a moderate fan into my 30s. And then now I pass that torch off to the younger generation. You guys can be obsessive. I'll be back when we get a quarterback. If we get a quarterback, but it is, we've talked about this a lot. It's just really tough for me to not, I don't know. I got the Super Bowl and I got complacent as a fan. I don't have the same expectations that like Patriots or Packers fans have. As a Colts fan, all I wanted was to see my team win a Super Bowl. And I saw them like, and it wasn't like, didn't win it when I was like five. They won it when I was like 22. It was like the perfect age to fully process the Super Bowl. So I'm satisfied.
I'll say this. I don't think you get to be like the fan that says, I'll be back when we have another quarterback after going from Peyton to Andrew Luck, regardless of whatever you think of Andrew Luck's like career ending short. Like he was amazing when he was good. And I don't think you get to do that. And that's like the same thing. I think even I'll and I didn't get a Super Bowl with the Chargers, but going from Rivers to Herbert, if Herbert stays the same trajectory he's on right now, I don't think I would allow myself to do that in the future when whenever we go from Herbert to the next guy.
Well, you know, as my example of being a Colts fan, starting in like 1997, we'll have a new franchise quarterback pretty soon. Like that's the way it works. You know, you just keep on churning out franchise quarterbacks. So we'll be okay.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah. As a Browns fan, I can relate. There's always a new one.
Well, it looks like Chicago maybe has a good quarterback, which is very weird for me to mentally process, because I don't associate competent quarterback play with Chicago Bears football.
Yeah. When's the last time I guess they had like is Cutler there? Cutler is the franchise guy, but before that, like I can't even think of the time where they had
Jim
like,
McMahon.
Yeah. But damn, Jim McMahon was cool.
Jim McMahon was inherently cool.
He went to BYU. That was always a weird thing.
Yeah.
He seems like an SMU guy, if anything.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying anything about BYU. I'm just saying like Jim McMahon does not have BYU vibes if you look at pictures of him as a professional football player.
Oh, he's such an SMU guy, I think. That's what I would think if I looked at Jim McMahon and you said, like, what college did he go to in the 80s or whatever? I'd be like, oh, well, obviously SMU.
Well,
he's not a BYU fan guy.
Jim Mac. Quick ad read episode, folks. Brought to you in part by...
This episode brought to you in part by 3Chi. That's right, 3Chi. 3CHI. It all rhymes there. 3Chi, shop for Deltate vapes, gummies, tinctures, oils, can be used to make homemade edibles, but also they sell great edibles themselves. A nice gooey brownie, the Rice Krispie treat stuff. It's outstanding. Code CAMERA, CAMERA, at checkout to receive 5% off your order. 3Chi, they're the industry leaders in federally legal version of THC, Delta 8. It's a more functional alternative to marijuana. Great, amazing buzz, great body feel. Much clearer head, though. Less anxiety, paranoia. It's all online, 3Chi, the number 3CHI.com, and at retailers around the country. Must be 21 to purchase. And remember, not CBD, just psychoactive. You get a great buzz, so use it responsibly. And again, it's 3Chi, the number 3CHI.com. Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures, oils, edibles, all that stuff. Use code CAMERA, CAMERA, at checkout to receive 5% off your order.
Before we get into the news, though, Don Gorski's back in the news.
Fucker.
And I was like, well, it's nothing new, but no, we're going to talk about this. So for those who don't know, we've talked about this guy many times. This is the guy, Don Gorski is, he's eaten over 30,000 Big Macs, he's had a Big Mac every day for years. He looks like John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't gain weight.
I'm here to eat peace and love. I'm here to consume these big McDonald's, Big Mac for short.
He was in the documentary Supersize Me. He stays healthy by skipping the fries, and he takes 6 mile walks. Okay. We've called him a fraud. I think he's full of shit. Maybe at one point he was, but I think we finally have evidence that this record needs to be halted. It doesn't need to be stripped away. Like I believe he did it for a while.
The counter needs to stop is what you're saying.
It's been since 1972. The counter has to be stopped. And I will read a comment from an article from Insider, because he recently just had a new video made about it. And this is what the comment says. Here we go. So Don comes, this is from the manager. So Don comes into the restaurant quite often. Dave Rouse, the franchise owner, says, matter of factly, since 1972, he used to come in once a day and order 2 Big Macs. It's fine. That's the record, right? Gets a Big Mac a day. That's the record. Since he's been retired, I think he figured out he was spending more on gas than he was on sandwiches. So now he picks up 6 at a time and 8 at a time on Mondays and Thursdays. So we get to see him twice a week. At one point in the video, this is the video posted by Guinness Book of World Records, we even see Gorski microwaving his Big Macs at home. That's fucking bullshit.
Can't do that.
That ain't the record. That ain't the record, my guy. That's not the fucking Big Mac record. The Big Mac record is your ass goes, your John Lennon looking ass goes to fucking McDonald's in Wisconsin, Oshkosh or the fuck you're from.
Fond du Lac.
Yeah, you walk in there once a day or twice a day. Every time you do it, you get a fucking Big Mac. You picking up 8 on Monday and 6 on Thursday. That's not the fucking record. That's you getting Big Macs twice a week.
Do you think he just like picks them up and then he goes home and then has the layout of like 8 Tupperware and then calls it meal prepping? Do my meal prepping for the week. I disagree with you guys. I think as long as he's eating a Big Mac, it still counts. But it is.
But it is
lame. Like, one, if you're gonna eat a Big Mac, like you want to get it fresh off the line at McDonald's, right? Like, that's the optimal experience. But then secondly, like if you've ever put a McDonald's hamburger in the refrigerator, it's pretty damn good cold.
But pretty I think that's cold. But still, that's not even like, I think the point, part of the whole record is the fact that he is making the trip every day. That is what is, regardless of the fact that we think he sucks, that is what I think is at least moderately impressive. The fact that he hauled his ass.
Right, which he did do that.
Exactly. He hauled his ass to that McDonald's every day. The fact that he's not, and he's just getting this shit, like not even delivered. He's just fucking reheating them. That's lame. That's lame. You don't get records for eating Stouffer's every fucking day. Like, that's I'm sorry. The record is done.
Do you think there was ever a day that was like, it was like the thing with the Cal Ripken Iron Man thing where they had to flood the field because Cal Ripken couldn't play, so his streak was alive? Do you think there was ever a situation where he just couldn't make it to McDonald's? And so McDonald's, like the managers was like, well, there's a power outage today.
We got to shut down.
Big Mac machine broke.
But yes. That's a good example. That'd be like Ripken going in 2-3 times a week just for the first, just to get, just call it an official game.
Mm-hmm.
Just coming out after 5. Like that's not, no.
Every time he walks into the McDonald's, it's always like when a reliever comes out towards the mound.
Yeah. What's his music that he plays? Walk out play a Beatles song to come out.
It's the Oh Yeah song from Ferris Bueller.
I am the walrus.
Boom, boom.
He said, I started out eating 9 a day for a while.
Yeah, it's just not true.
What do you think his wife thinks of this? Because he's been married since 1973.
She didn't know when they met. She had no idea. He just didn't tell her.
She thought the impermeable musk of fucking like Big Macs, was that just what he smelled like?
You can tell she's fed up. Don Gorski did not tell me about his Big Mac obsession when we met. His wife, Mary Gorski, told this Guinness team, I didn't realize it would go on forever. She sounds done with it. She's she says, while Gorski plans to eat Big Macs every day for the rest of his life, he said Mary has drawn a line. When it comes to where she's going to put a Big Mac in a blender, then she says it's over for me.
In a blender?
You know, because marriages are a living organism that require constant work. And there are things that, like, and not just marriages, right? Like just long-term romantic relationships. There are things that, like, the more time you spend with somebody, like things do, like, and maybe not all like, you know, completely rational, but there are little things the other person might do that start to like annoy you a little bit. It's just natural.
I do. And like that his name, by the way, is Don Gorski, because that name is built to be the guy with this record. Like, if you asked me to make up a name of a guy to hold a record like this, yeah, I would say Gorski. Don Gorski. Just fit.
Hey, is that Gorski? Yeah.
But you can almost just imagine, like, his like wife, or even if he has kids, his kids just being like, you know what? It's time to hang up the cleats on the Big Mac stuff. You have the record. Nobody's coming for it. It's not like you're going to have the King of Kong guy with his leather jacket and tie or whatever coming after your Big Mac record. You can't do it. You're safe, Don.
Mm-hmm. It's like you're saying, like, it's not even as if like someone isn't going to make there because the record is so far. It's like no one's even trying to do it because no one gives a shit. You know what I mean? It's a double whammy as far as like the fact that he shouldn't be trying anymore.
You know, Gen Zers just do not have the drive and determination that it takes to eat a Big Mac a day for 30 consecutive years.
No. And to stick to the apparently insane workout regimen that old Don Gorski sticks to.
Six miles
a day, by the way. I don't think that's going to offset 2 Big Macs worth of cholesterol every single fucking day. Like, there's just no way.
And I like that, like, the no fries. Like, come on.
Yeah, six miles would be what? Like, maybe 400,
is it a brisk walk?
Calories of work?
I want to know the speed of the walk.
15 minutes per while. If you walk 6 miles, you burn about 500 calories.
Okay.
The heavier you are, the more calories you burn. So he's burning 500 calories a day. Typical max is what? It has to be at least
540 calories.
So he's burning off half of that, but that's only the caloric count. That's not even like the other side effects this is giving him, like whatever saturated fat and cholesterol and shit. Like that's just his arteries. I mean, I would love to see like a fucking, well, not that I'll be able to read it, but to see just like a cardiogram of this guy.
You know what though? I'm gonna play devil's advocate for Don here. What if he's just built different and you mind your own business?
Yeah, fair.
Like, don't worry about my health. I'm the one eating, like, because I'm sitting here, I'm like, how could you eat this many Big Macs a day? And then also if I have like one grain of like wheat, I have instant diarrhea. I'm like, but that can't be healthy. So who knows, man? Like there are some people who are just exceptionally healthy regardless of diet. And my hat's off, because I do think this is an accomplishment. Whatever value you assign to the accomplishment is up to you, but it is an accomplishment. But I just think it's time. Like Cal Ripken had to pull the plug. Don Gorski, I would like to see him retire and just say, I'm on to the Whopper. It's now time for 30 years of Whopper.
You think he annoys like the Guinness people too? He's like, anybody go for the record yet? Still, nope. Yes, Don.
No, still you, trying. Don.
No, I think the Guinness people love him, because this is probably one of the more like famous Guinness records, like active Guinness records, right?
I guess, yeah.
I mean, but my perception of the Guinness Book of World Records is from 1991 and Plastic Book Fair. So
there's three people. It's
the heavy people. Twins on the motorcycle.
No, okay, wait. No,
the guy
six.
With the long fingernails.
Yes. You got heavy twins, long fingernails, tallest guy, shortest guy, Don Gorski. That's them. That's the six. That's the Guinness. Just goes back to and then Ripley's Believe It or Not has the guy that does the weird face. The old guy who puts like the bottom of his face.
Oh,
weird.
Yeah, that one's gross.
What if it's the other way around? What if like Guinness is like, Don, baby, you're the face of the book.
You gotta keep doing this,
Donnie. Don. I'm sorry. I don't know why he has like
a guy in a tracksuit and aviators at his house. Don, my guy.
We gotta bring you back for one last burger. I'm retired from that game. Sorry, fellas.
Look, Donnie, you know this. Just take it one day at a time.
There's nothing more shocking than going to the Alamo in San Antonio and looking at the Alamo and then turning around and there's a massive Ripley's Believe It or Not steps away from the Alamo.
It is. Yeah. Well, there's also that pizza, or I'm sorry. There's also that picture of Cairo and the great pyramids. And then that Pizza Hut that like, you can see them in the same shot.
Unbelievable.
Well, how much would you pay pure dollar amount for like an insanely fast metabolism? Like,
oh my God.
Like a freak metabolism.
Is this a subscription service or is this like a one-time
payment?
Meaning that I can eat garbage food nonstop and it wouldn't impact me?
Would not impact your weight. I would pay a sickening amount of money for that. Like a disgusting amount.
It's just better. It's just the food I like.
Exactly.
And I eat good food. I cook a lot. Like I do eat good food. I mean, like shit this summer. I've packed on like 20 since Christmas, but I would love to just be able to wolf down Popeyes.
You know what sucks for us is, so me and Jeff, we sit across from one of our coworkers, Marty Mush, and he eats like a fucking pig.
He's like a fucking goon.
Like he eats like we used to eat, like all of us probably in high school, like where he just eats McDonald's, like fast food and the most unhealthy shit every single day, and he never gains so much as a fucking ounce. And it pisses me off so much.
Gatorade's the high schooler's water too.
Yes.
It's like that,
yes.
All of your water comes from Gatorade.
It's exactly. It's just like siphoned through that. And just, well, it pisses me off. And that's what I want. I want that back, that beautiful metabolism.
I hate to break it to you guys at 30 and 28, right, respectively, but it gets worse. Yeah. It just does.
Does it improve?
It does. It gets harder. It like 33, I keep saying it. 33 was the age like my body just went to pudding and everything went to shit. Like also literally, because that's when I start getting sick all the time. But, pretty much when I started the podcast, but it is it's just a fact of life. And that's also the thing, is like there's also a beauty in kind of accepting it. Like we change as we get older, our body changes and the stuff we got to manage and just kind of hitting a ball back to the industry that tells us we have to maintain a youthful appearance all the time. Like that, that's just, that's a treadmill I don't want to get on. So, you know, aging's tough, but hey,
I've since 2013, I've lost 60 plus pounds on three separate occasions. I've Christian Bale for 7 years.
You don't want to call that Morgan Spurlocking?
Spurlocking?
No. That sounds like something different.
Bad dude.
Oh, come on.
Bad dude. Remember when he just self-canceled himself?
Spurlocking sounds like a dance move or something.
Yeah.
Like pop and locking.
Come on, everybody. Like do a Spurlock dance.
It's like pop and locking with cowboy boots on.
Hit him with that Morgan Spurlock. Yeah.
That was actually a brilliant. That was a great one. Pretty good, I like that show.
This episode brought to you, shout out to Don Gorsk. I don't hate you, Don Gorsk. I just think you're kind of full of shit,
man. I think you suck.
Also, the fact that he just looks exactly like John Lennon is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
He's a poser.
It's just a, like, it's 2021. Drop
imagine
the John Lennon.
All the pickles sitting on this bun. You may say I'm a dreamer. I don't know what lyrics to say.
I really wanted to sign off on that.
I just all beef patty and special sauce. I eat three a day.
You know, he's one of those guys too that like won't acknowledge that he looks like him. Yeah, oh, do you model your style after John Lennon? What?
Yeah, because out of all the Beatles, like John Lennon is maybe the second one you don't want to look like.
Who's the first? So.
I think I will say like back in the day it was Ringo, but I think Ringo's aged very, very well. Like Lonnie will do that to you. Like I think Ringo's a good looking older dude.
Lennon hasn't.
But I think it's most universally accepted that George Harrison was the most attractive Beatle.
Oh, for sure.
Like you want to look like George Harrison. Like if you get a Beatles comparison, you want to say, hey, you look like George Harrison. If someone says like, you look like John Lennon, you're like, man, I want to look like George Harrison. And even like Paul McCartney in like his 30s when he had the big beard, like extremely attractive look he had going on.
Yeah. But then once he shaved it, he looked kind of like a bird. And that, I think he should have kept it.
Yeah. But however, he is the captain of the Beatles.
So. He is the captain. He has that over George Harrison.
I've talked about the Beatles in the last like month more than I've talked about on the podcast, just because I watched that 3-2-1 McCartney documentary on Hulu. I don't know if it's a documentary. It's just him and Rick Rubin. It's exceptionally fascinating. And then I went and watched some other ones. I watched that Scorsese George Harrison documentary.
Mm. Peter Jackson's coming out soon, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think you know what I think about it is like interesting, like in retrospect, and forgive me if I've talked about this before, is like they all were like 30 when the Beatles broke up, which is like still pretty young. Like when I was a kid, when I was 18 listening to them, I was like, man, they broke up, and you know, here they're 30. You don't realize, like, you know, 30 seems like a long way off. And you also have like Paul McCartney writing "Let It Be" when he's like 29, and they have the rest of their lives. And so I don't know. I just always like go back and think about like how young they really were when they started, and they're just getting like, you know, drunk and having fun in clubs in Hamburg, and or the Beatles. I don't know where to take it other than that.
Remember when the Beatles one album dropped? How big of a deal that was, the CD?
Yeah, I do, because nobody had heard of the Beatles until they released all their most famous songs onto one album.
I remember it was a big deal when, was it Beatles Rock Band came out? Oh, like the music hits in high, I think it was high school, right? And they all went like nuts. They're like, oh shit, we get to play Beatles songs now. And that was like still ballistic for people around our age.
Well, the first major like Beatles thing I can remember is the Beatles anthology. I think it was like 1995. They're like these mini series specials on ABC, and then they re-released the music as outtakes and other versions of songs with like promised new songs on them. So there was one song that was like called "Free as a Bird" and this other song called "Real Love," and that was the first time I could really remember the Beatles like kind of coming back. Like every now and then they just say like, oh hey, here's like a new like reshuffling of the things you already know, and people love it. Love it. I love it.
I like the Beatles as well. Yeah, remember when he had a good halftime show too. It was tame. It was they had to clean it up after the Janet Jackson thing, but it was cool. Paige was a cool moment.
Let's call it the Justin Timberlake thing. Yeah, I feel it was rightfully the Justin Timberlake.
It was Justin Timberlake moment. Yeah.
He's been laying low.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yes. Yes.
Mostly because that last album was not mostly, but that last album, I'll keep coming back to that. Remember that song Woods, that was right? Like, yeah, but the song was like, what you gonna do with all that meat? Cooking up a mean serving.
That's cool, just music video though. It's too subtle too. You just don't
terrible halftime show, Justin Timberlake.
Awful.
Kind of poetic though. Yeah. Not a good halftime show. Episode brought to you by BetterHelp.
BetterHelp. Outstanding service. You got a lot of stress in life, potentially. Big or small, doesn't matter who you are, but you got a little bit of stress. It happens. It's normal. You may not be feeling down. You may not be feeling depressed or at a total loss, but if you are stressed and you have high stress, your temper might be shorter, might be straining relationships, straining sleep, eating, whatever it may be. It helps to unload. It helps to speak to someone. And so you can unload and speak to someone with BetterHelp. I talk to someone who's completely unbiased about your life. No prejudgments, none of that. Someone who isn't going to judge you, take a side, any of that stuff. BetterHelp, it's customized online therapy that offers video, phone, live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't got to see anyone on camera if you don't want either. That's the nice part. It takes away the stressor of that. There's a reason why some people don't do therapy. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy. You can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours, unload the stressors, get some unbiased feedback. You'd be surprised at what you might gain from it. Trust me, give it a whirl. And right now you get 10% off BetterHelp. First month at BetterHelp, B-E-T-T-E-R, help, HELP.com/lights. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/lights.
All right, shout out BetterHelp. Not a ton of movie news today, a lot of procedural news. Boring. Venom 2 delayed to October 15th. Some saw that as a bad thing. Like, I mean, I get why it's delayed, the Delta variant, all that shit. But like, you know what? At least like I expected if it was delayed, it'd be delayed much longer. Shang-Chi is gonna still hit theaters. Ken Jack and I are seeing it next week. Can't wait.
That's right.
But it'll be on Disney Plus 45 days after it releases.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if they do did they say if they're gonna do that like for a month after that 45 days and then bring it back off streaming, or
I don't know.
Curious how that's going
to
work.
What was AMC and Universal came to an agreement, right? AMC and Warner Brothers came to that 45-day theatrical run and then go to streaming. And you got to almost think that's just the way it's going to work now.
Right. Which is good.
Something like that. Something in that range, I would imagine. I mean, the movie you're reviewing today, Free Guy, would have been, I'm assuming, put on Premier access for Disney if it wasn't part of the pay window still with HBO. So like they basically had to put it, like, since Disney owns it, it's part of the Fox merger, they had to release it theatrically because of the contract. And so we would have been watching it probably on Premier access otherwise.
Wasn't it a good feeling
though when like there's a movie still in theaters that you felt like you had to see because it was going to leave theaters soon? You know, just catching a movie at the end of its run and then having like seven people in the theater.
Those were the days. I don't think I've had that feeling in a long time. Yeah, it's so early now, but
you know, it's a popular one that people saw long after the hype was Slumdog Millionaire, because it wasn't in a lot of theaters, and then it won the Oscar, and then a lot of people went to see it. Sorry. What else? A live action My Hero Academia movie is in the works
with the original guy, I believe, which is kind of cool. That's a good show. That's a pretty damn good show. I like that.
I think I see that on. It's on Netflix, right?
I think it's on Hulu and Netflix.
Hulu, one of them.
I haven't
dove into that yet.
It's a good show, though. I think you'd like it. It's
107 episodes. It's a back catalog of shit.
Yeah, but it's very much like it feels like Kill la Kill is parodying My Hero Academia in a sense. So like you'll see a lot of similarities there, since I know you've watched that, but not My Hero Trill. But I like that show a lot. I'm excited for that.
I started watching the Evangelion. How was it on Prime? I don't know. I'm like halfway through the first one. There's four of them.
I'm holding off on that for a little bit. I need to be in the right mindset to get back into some old EVA.
I'm gonna be finally catching up on Bad Batch. Excited for that. figured I wanted to binge it, so I just kind of waited.
Solid finale. Definitely didn't feel too much like a finale, and maybe that's, and we were talking about this on our recap on YouTube, me, Clem, and Robbie. The finale, it felt like you could have inserted it at any point during the season and it would have fit without a hitch, which is kind of weird. But otherwise, overall, very solid show and excited for season two.
What else? What's another thing that I, the Christmas episode, which I had watched weeks ago of Ted Lasso dropped. Fucking delightful.
Mm.
Not shocked
at all. They're just good.
Need to watch that.
Yeah. I will say Dave ended with an awesome ending. I liked the season of Dave. Some people were a little off on it in the beginning. But I don't know. It's not an anthology show. Like it was building to something. And I think what the show did, I won't say anything. I think Dave it falls in that genius bucket of TV. I think it's incredibly fucking smart. And just really, really well made. It ended with a bang.
I really liked that I was worried it was just going to be a downer. You know, some like shows like stretch of stuff out. Like, you know, and then they still left, like, obviously with his manager friend and everything, like there's some drama still there, but I do like how they resolved the, you know, is it fair to call it depressing? I wouldn't call it depressing, but it was a little more like introspective tone of the season with like a feel good moment at the end. That's as much as I'll say, but yeah, I'm with you. Like I think I was reading the day, like I was reading the Dave Reddit boards, and a lot of people weren't liking the first half of the season, but I think it kind of turned around the back half. But then I think like it's going to be one of those things that if you were to watch that entire season, like binge it, it would be very satisfying.
Yeah. I don't know. But would you agree with that? What did you think? We didn't really talk about it. Were you kind of out on it early?
No, I wasn't. I think it's just expectations. Like I think the first season definitely had a different tone to it. I think it was a little more comical. Well, I mean, at least the comedy was maybe less dark or whatever, but I enjoyed it. I thought like there were episodes I really liked, like the Kareem episode I thought was very, very well done. And I kind of got where they were going. And when they go into, you know, it's kind of like, it's kind of like the FX has like a stable of like almost these shows. I think it started with Louis. And then of course you have Atlanta as well, and you have Dave that kind of get a little more surreal as they go on, and they're all very interesting for it. But I think that's the second season of Dave was a little more you know, going back to the Rick Rubin episode, a little more surreal than the first. And I don't know, I enjoyed it.
Second act of a play, right? It's always gonna be a little darker, always gonna be a little different. That's kind of how I viewed it. I mean,
well I thought even if they ended the series with that episode, it would have been like pretty satisfying.
Yeah, no, I think it was, I think it's fucking fan. I kind of got laid into it on the first season, but I think it's fan. It's what he wanted to do. I mean, that's like his fucking dream. It wasn't the music; it was this.
There was a comment on the Reddit that was kind of funny though, where basically the show kind of caught up to like the actual man in terms of like where he's at, in terms of like releasing his first album. And then they're like, is he going to make his own show on the show that he made after releasing his first album?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, where do you diverge up to this point? It's like semi-autobiographical and whatever. And now you've like somewhat caught up to your own timeline.
I mean, some of it is super, super semi. I mean, the Breakfast Club thing, Charlamagne was literally in the episode.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the cipher?
From the first season.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no. But then the cipher from the XXL was basically a bad version of the one he actually did.
Good show though. Yeah, good.
I want Atlanta season 3. I think it's coming on 2022, but I can't wait to watch that. Speaking of good shows that I believe are both on FX.
Yeah, FX is a weirdly like solid.
Or FXX is it FX or FXX?
It's FXX.
FXX. Right? Yeah, it's FXX.
I watch it online. Sure?
Yeah, I watched Dave on Hulu.
Because the original FX, all they show now is like the MTV ridiculousness thing, but it's just the Fireman Dennis Leary show.
Oh, Rescue Me! Rescue Me rules, okay.
23 hours of Rescue Me.
He's not making fun of Rescue Me,
dude. Rescue Me was a great show. No, he was getting a little smarm to his voice there. Rescue Me was a great show.
We had two shows on trivia the other night that I remembered one of them. Another I didn't. One was with Dennis Leary, The Moody's. And then there was the unicorn with the unicorn had
unicorn. I remember
Walton Goggins, Rob Corddry. Yeah,
there's definitely someone else in that. Fuck,
I do like how like FXX has basically become like the USA, but like for smarter people.
Yes, you're essentially correct.
There is a good quality to FXX. It's a very like HBO. Like I will say, like when they drop a show, like I kind of have an expectation that it's going to have like a different type of high quality to it.
Same here. They definitely have like a really solid lineup.
That's how I used to feel about MTV.
Rewatching season 5 of Rescue Me. The original FX original.
Dude, Rescue Me, again, quit talking shit. You're about to eat it. It's a fucking great show.
I can't smoke here.
I've been actually binging Sons of Anarchy on like season 5 now. It's fucking awesome. It's such a great dudes rock show. And I think someone had tweeted at me recently that like, it's basically Sopranos for bikers, and it's true. Except it's not as good as Sopranos, but man, I can't get enough of it. It's so good. I don't think you guys haven't watched that, right? Sons?
No. I've not, but I know people love it. Rockstar developing remastered versions of first three GTAs. Interested?
No, because the gameplay probably sucks in a modern context.
Ooh,
I guess I am in Vice City because I think Vice City. Some people feel that about San Andreas, and I think San Andreas was overall the best game, but the Vice City was such a specific like 80s and the music in there and the like the David Bowie song they had in there, Fascination, like all that stuff was like that was my favorite game. So I might be interested in replaying that one. But I think back to like the fact that like shooting sucks in GTA 5. So going back to like GTA 3 and doing the like, unless they revamp it, I'm a little worried about it because I'm a little worried about like all these remakes. Like I got that SNES Mini and I like started playing the games and I'm like, I'm kind of bored. Worried about the same thing.
Not having Snap 2 like aim assist or whatever when you're doing a drive-by or just shooting in general, that would suck. Going back to that now. You know what I have been playing though, Trill, is I re-downloaded Red Dead 2 on my PS5 and the graphics are so fucking good. It's incredible. I mean, I don't think it's remastered at all for that, but like, I don't know, dude. It just looks so much better. It's incredible.
It is, in my opinion, the last truly great video game to be released.
It's insane. And there's something I forgot about the game too, because I just started like a new campaign with it or whatever, a new story mode. It's just like how deep the storyline is. Like there's like a trillion different missions you can do at any given point. And like, it's impossible to even begin to like get to the bottom of all of them. Like it's crazy. That is one where like, just like when you're riding a horse across the plain or something, and the lighting and the shadows are just so fucking intense. I'm like, bravo to the guys who made this game. Cause it is beyond like the realm of what I thought would be possible playing video games back in like 2005.
Yeah, it kind of sucks that you know, the game was great, but also the downside of things like that is like it also sets your expectations in a very unrealistic area for like what a video game should be, because not every video game has like $200 million in 8 years and how many, you know, work hours of budget. But I will say this about video games, I bought the battle pass in Call of Duty. That's where I'm at in Call of Duty right now. I'm a pig.
Yeah, you're in deep.
I'm paying them for the battle pass to get the operator skin for I don't know, I think a new one's Kitsune. I don't know. Rough.
Fuck, what was I about to say about video games? And I lost it.
They're good. They're like a free guy. Rule.
Oh no, my buddy John, he listens to the podcast. John, you still owe me for when I lent you Red Dead Redemption 1 and you put it in your Xbox and the Xbox fucking fell over and put a big ring in it. Still owe me.
Shredded.
Yeah, I know you're listening.
I would watch,
damn it, Dutch.
I would watch a 30-minute special on why that happened.
The red ring or in general, or
no, the falling over the console, breaking the game. Like,
yeah, remember there, that was
the laser scratches it, doesn't it? Not, or is that the thing?
Is that what it is?
Maybe, but I want more specific detail. Because
right,
that seems like a design flaw. It seems like something you should account for.
It's falling into a position that's acceptable to use it in.
Well, like did it just fall like tip over, or like I'm picturing it falling down and like,
well, you know,
tumbling.
Okay, so he had it upright,
yeah,
and it fell over onto its side, and it puts that big throw, which I'd had happen to a game before. The 360 did that, but like maybe it's gyroscoped a certain way. I don't know what the correct proper term. Maybe when it's standing up, like the gears work in a different way than when it, maybe so when it does go down, it hasn't switched properly. Like I don't know.
Literally, that's, when it falls down and the CD player hits the ground, like the force of the, like it's just a heavy, the X-Darks 360 is pretty fucking heavy. Like the laser just comes down and burns while it's reading.
We'll put circle in it.
I will say, like, I guess that just implies that the next frontier of hardware development is a PlayStation 6 that can run at a 45 degree angle. And they have like a 45 degree stand for the PlayStation 6, both like eliminating the space saving footprint of the horizontal or the vertical stand. It's the worst of both worlds, but it looks cooler. It's basically on a stand that looks like one of those things you put an autographed basketball in.
Yeah. Yes. Hell yeah. What if you just put them in a literal gyroscope? Like, and then you just throw it around the room. It doesn't even move in the same spot. That'd
well,
be
I mean,
cool.
you probably could do that because I haven't run, like I have a disc version of the PlayStation 6, but I don't have a single game that I've been running off of disc.
Mm.
So like, you probably could if everything's solid state. Like I'm sure the fans of course are mechanical, but I don't know.
And I'm excited. I'm excited to play more video games, to be honest. I'm excited for the next big game, and I don't really know what it's going to be.
Talk video game. Actually, no, we're going to talk to Emmanuel Shrieky first.
Can I say one thing though?
Yep.
I just got to get it out of my brain. Something that always fascinates me is like, you'll be at Six Flags, and you'll be in like the roller coaster terminal, and you'll see a computer running Windows XP there.
Yes.
I'm always like,
yes,
how long has a computer been there, and how long has it continuously been running? I want to know that computer story.
That is so true. All those types of things with life and death on the line too, a roller coaster, they're all running with that green lawn and blue sky.
Do, 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 do.
A little green start button with the blue bar. Emmanuel Shrieky, we chatted with her. It was a great time. Talked a lot about Canada. Here it is. All right. We are now very happy to be joined by Emmanuel Shrieky. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for stopping in. Plenty to get to, but let's start off right on the top here with your new movie, Dying a Gunfight, in theaters or on demand. It's one of those vehicles. I'll give you a little synopsis. A man and his old flame cross paths with an assortment of schemers and killers. That's a very short one, but I will note something off the top. This is, I think, the first thing I'm going to ask you. A lot of Romeo and Juliet vibes. I've seen described as an updated version of Romeo and Juliet. You're talking to someone, myself, who is a champion of the Baz Luhrmann Romeo plus Juliet. So anything that is a reimagining or a re-envisioning of that, even though I have the reading comprehension skills of a 5-year-old and I can't read anything, so I'm not a big Shakespeare person, I'm all in on that. So what can you tell, before we get to the Romeo and Juliet part, what can you tell people listening what they can expect with this movie?
Oh gosh. You know what? Listen, it's what you just said. It's a reimagined sort of really action packed, kind of on the edge of your seat, summer fun, violent in like all the good ways, film. And listen, Diego Boneta is amazing and Alexander Daddario, and then the whole rest of the cast. It's just a really fun, it's a fun movie.
It is different. And I'll say that too, because we've seen it. It's very different than the Baz Luhrmann one. It's they're reading Shakespeare the whole time, but was that on the top of your mind though? Like that type of movie, like the reimagining thing of this type of material.
I think that it's very stylized. Like I think there's a lot of really cool sort of cinema, you know, like cinematography in the film that's wildly unexpected, that kind of takes you on a ride as well. I think that you know, our director Colin Shifley had such an amazing vision, really. So it is, it's like it's a visual ride as well, and not conventional, which I kind of loved about it.
Do you like Shakespeare stuff? Like, is that something? Because I know some people, again, I'm not a fanatic, but.
Oh, no. Well, you're also talking to total theater geek, like went to high school of the performing arts. I went to college. Like, all my training was theater. So for me to like break down a sonnet, that was like, oh, you know, so I have an affinity for it. I really do.
There is like a certain level, just speaking about general acting, there's like a certain level of camp, I think, in a lot of these characters in this movie. Is that balance sort of hard to nail down as an actor?
You know, I think that it always depends on the writing and it depends on who's guiding the ship. You know, in this case, you know, again, because we're talking about like such an out of the box, like super stylized film, you know, Travis and I, we really got to go big or go home. Like for me, I was so excited to do this because it's a true cameo. Like, you know, sometimes you say you're doing a cameo. This is a true cameo. This is like a couple of scenes, unrecognizable when you first see me, so fun, so offbeat. And I get to work with Travis. And, but the thing is that I feel like it's all, everything, no matter how big, it always has to be grounded in something real. So in our case, in the, you know, the storyline of Barbie and Wayne, it was grounded in their like crazy love for each other. Crazy being the operative word.
It reminded me almost of the duo from the end of Pulp Fiction. I love that sort of dynamic that you guys had in that. I like your accent in it as well. The cool, like almost southerny accent to it. What's your favorite accent as an actress to do? Because there's sort of like a wide range you can get through. And I feel like that's something I would love as an actor, trying to dig my teeth into different accent work.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I definitely love a southern accent. I love, you know, like a French accent. I love, but you know, accents are tricky too. Like if you don't, if you're not going to do it great, just don't do it.
Have you ever landed? I love asking this with accents too, because obviously, you know, you're from Canada and the Canadian accent is, it's a little, you know, it's not as drastic as say doing a British accent or doing something a little crazier. But for you though, have you ever been on a set with maybe someone who is American or someone else and it's a Canadian role or something that maybe you're familiar with and you go, oh no, you go, that's not the way to do it.
The Canadian accent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually really funny because I don't know if you guys know this or not, but I did Super Troopers.
Yeah. Yep.
And so that was crazy because, you know, I've been living in the States for 20 plus years. And as an actor, when you come to the States, you kind of you need to neutralize your accent. So basically you can't go in the room sounding Canadian. So when I went to go do this movie, I had to relearn to kind of have a Canadian accent. And it was so much harder than you could possibly think. Like you train your mouth to move in a certain way. And suddenly what was once supernatural is not. But I thought that the guys on set did actually a really great job.
But, it was Rob Lowe, right? Rob Lowe was the other Canadian, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He was. Yeah. That's right. Speaking of Canada, just in general, this whole movie was filmed in Toronto, and Canada in general is just kind of growing as a production hub in general for movies. Do you prefer filming there versus like Georgia or LA or any of the other major production spots?
I love shooting at home. I've been spoiled. I shot several series here in LA. There's nothing like shooting at home. It's amazing to go on location anywhere, Canada included. A series, I prefer to shoot at home. A film, I'll go anywhere. It's a shorter amount of time. You know, Canada, yeah, Canada's great. Is it my favorite place to film? No, I think it really depends on what season we're talking about. And, you know, yeah, I'm just... You've never met anybody that loves California more than me.
What for this movie anyway, what do you find is the biggest difference between doing a smaller budget movie like this one? I think it was only like a $4 million budget versus like a big budget movie. Like you had done Zohan, which had like 22 times the budget that this movie had. Like what's the difference in production on those two types of sets?
You know, I would say sort of pointing out the obvious is that with a bigger budget film, you just have more time. You know, you're not a rushing, you know, you're not on a 21-day schedule or a 25-day schedule. You've got months to shoot a film. You know, I remember early in my career, I did a film called Snow Day.
Oh, yeah.
Paramount, you know, studios. We shot that. We had 4 months to shoot that movie. Unheard of these days. But having said that, I will say this. I've talked about this with friends a lot. I love the fast pace of like an indie film. Like you come in and you hit the ground running only because I tend to, if I have too much time to think, I'm going to think my way out of stuff. And that's not always great. Whereas like there is really something to like, just, you know, you do your work, you do your homework, and then you just go with your gut. And I find that really exciting. I find it like keeps things fresh. I love making indie films. It's not to say I don't studio films, like big ones, but I like moving fast.
This may be a crazy thing to say because it's July 21st, but I meant to only watch a couple clips, but I just watched Snow Day in full recently because the Jean Smart has had such a big year and she had all these nominations. And I was 9 when Snow Day came out and I said, holy shit. I said, I forgot she was in Snow Day. And I went to go watch a clip and then, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours later, there it was.
I love that.
4 months though. That's crazy though. That is a fact I never would have guessed on a movie like that. Where pretty simple now to superhero movies nowadays, where they're shot like a month, like 2 weeks almost, it seems like.
I know, it's crazy.
Dying to Gunfight Again in theaters and on demand, which actually the on demand thing, and I'm curious your thoughts on this because you've done so many projects for so many years, but also TV as well. And you were in a TV show that was as traditionally like put out there in like the HBO vessel once a week. And that seems to be coming back a little bit, like the Disney Pluses of the world, even like Apple TVs, and then they dropped just a couple. But for this, something like this, like a lower budget movie, this is obviously, I think, a different world nowadays, kind of forced in through COVID. Do you like that? Like, does your TV sensibility come in, or you like someone being able to watch at home and kind of view something that may not get as wide of an audience because of the way theaters work and distribution?
You know, I'll be honest with you. It's bittersweet. You know, I'm a bit of a purist. Like, you know, I come from the theater. I love old school film. I remember shooting actually on 8mm. Like, you know, and I think, listen, you have to roll with the times. I hope and pray that the movie theater experience isn't gone. Like, I think it's such an amazing, it's such a fun outing. It's such a great ritual that we have. There's like a whole other experience to going to the movies, but it's not the world we live in right now. We're like post pandemic, people are freaked out. Am I grateful that there's another place for people to watch these movies so we can keep on making content? 100%.
It's such a new term too.
Normalize a little bit, you know, in the future.
It's weird having to say like, see it in theaters to people. And not even like see it while it's there. It's like, no, instead of watching it at home, like you leave the theater now and you're like, I really hope people actually travel to see something like that. Like it's a strange new world. Yeah. You're right.
Crazy that we're in, like, if you actually think about it, it's nuts living through this, where that's a reality. Like growing up, right? It was like going to the movies, going with the family, going with the friends. Like, what? The fact that, I can't. The Arclight, I can't.
That's That's something that I've never, every time we talk to someone who's in California and we talk about theaters, we hear ArcLight. And so I had family who lived in California, but I never got to go to an ArcLight theater, and we're purists too. And it's mostly for the movie, but it's also a little because of popcorn. Everyone says ArcLight's popcorn is the greatest popcorn ever.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I believe that you can still DoorDash the popcorn.
Wow. Really?
Incredible.
That was a huge thing. Huge thing.
That's all. It's like we get taunted by anyone who's out and out. Like, oh, ArcLight this. And like, well, it's popcorn purists.
It was a special place. Like, ArcLight was one of those places where, you know, like on a weekend, if you wanted to go do a double feature, like you would, the theater was beautiful. They had so many films playing. You could literally go watch 2-3 movies in a day if you're, you know, a cinephile and that's what you wanted to do. But it like, awesome, like restaurants all around. It was just like the greatest place. So many premieres, so many like fantastic memories. It was like truly heart-wrenching. Like you were like, wait, what? Are you serious that ArcLight no more? What?
Did they get saved though? Is that like, did somebody try to save them recently?
Oh, that's a good question.
I believe there is a whole thing to try to save it. I don't know where that's at, to be honest with you.
Well, if they do save it, we will have to make our venture out there, get that popcorn just in that lease. We obviously have to talk a little bit about Entourage. I feel like, you know, that's just that's what you got to do. But very similar to what I just said as well, a lot of these shows from that era have this revival of, you know, The Office is probably the best example, right? Like everyone, you know, the younger generation is discovering The Office as if it just came out, which is great. That's not me, not gatekeeping The Office. But Entourage, maybe a little different. It's not as accessible solely because of the subject matter of Entourage. But I feel like it's a show that may eventually pick up that type of steam. You hear all these, there's always a random rumor about a reboot. Where have you seen kind of from your end of being in the show with Entourage? Like, have you seen it maybe a slightly different revival from like a different type of generation, especially in the last year or so?
Oh my God. 1,000,000%.
Really? Okay.
Oh my God. I think during the pandemic, every 17-year-old watched it for the first time. And then we had like, you know, plus there's the Victory podcast, which is just so much. And it's been such a success, you know, with Kevin Connolly and Doug Ellen and Kevin Dillon. So I think there's been like a total Entourage resurgence. And I think that the thing that's with Entourage, you know, and obviously there are other shows as well, but certainly our show, is that it's the kind of show where people that are fans will like watch it 10 times.
Yep.
Like over and over and over again. Kind of really cool. So I think that we had both, but I do. I think there's a resurgence. And I think like the youngsters that discover it are like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever.
One of our coworkers,
Glennie
is a big fan, and he claimed to be the biggest, and Jerry Farrar came on our radio show and just waxed the floor with him in Entourage trivia, just embarrassed him beyond belief. But yeah, he's in that same generation. It's like it's kind of crazy. It's like everything with streaming, it just lives on beyond what you could imagine.
Absolutely. Yep.
He'd watch like his 80th version and he's just like, yeah, I'm not sick of that. I just want to watch your Entourage show like the 80th time in a row. So you were originally with Entourage only supposed to be in a few episodes, but what do you think about just your performance, I guess, or your relationship with the entire group? Like, what about it made you them bring you on as a season regular?
That's a great question. What made them bring me on as a season regular? I would say that it had a lot to do with chemistry. I think that aside from my character, Doug Ellen, the creator of the show, really, really wanted to find E's counterpart. And so initially it was like a 3-episode arc, but going into it, you know, I remember when I got the part, Kevin Connolly, E was like, you know, we can really turn this into something. So I think everybody was eager to find something that was going to work. And the truth is, and I mean, Doug will tell you this himself, is that Ian Sloan sort of became like his favorite couple in a lot of ways, that he was just like really partial to. And I think that's just it. I think there are some things that are meant to be. There's some gigs that are like game changers, that are like the craziest surprise, you know. Like I always say, like it's quite, in our business, it's quite amazing to sign on for a 3-episode arc, end up doing, you know, all the seasons and a movie. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't really happen that often. So I feel like it was all very destined. I think it was right. I was supposed to work with these guys. I was supposed to know them forever. And they're my bros to this day.
Gotcha. We need to normalize like the idea of blank seasons in a movie counting the same as like winning an Emmy or like a Golden Globe. Cause I feel like that's such like a big, you get blank seasons in a movie, your show has done something rather impactful. Mm-hmm. I feel like that needs to be an award.
It's cool. It is. It's, you're lucky if you get that one time in your career. That's really, really true.
Mm-hmm. There's days I go down like rabbit holes looking at shows that you're like, I can't believe this existed. And you're like, I can't believe that there are. And then like after that, you're like, I can't believe there are shows that actually existed for 8 seasons, let alone like shows that exist for 1.
Or 15.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's nuts. I agree.
Before we go here, we want to go back to Canada. We want to ask some Canadian things to you. mostly off the top, like a Mount Rushmore, because Canada. And I feel like it's funny, we mentioned accents. Accents, I feel like, kind of mask sometimes where you go, people find out, like, wait, that person's from Canada as well. Where it's not like maybe like a British actor or Australia where you kind of hear, oh, okay, they're not American. Where you see, you're like, oh my God, all these people are from Canada. They're not American actors. So maybe a Mount Rushmore. What's your top 4 Canadian entertainers?
Musicians.
Yeah.
Singer. I mean,
we'll bracket it to acting. We can say acting.
Yeah, so you can't name Bare Naked Ladies on this list. I'm sorry to disappoint.
No, Alanis Morissette. Okay. I would go with... I love Rachel McAdams. I love Ryan Reynolds. I love Ryan Gosling. I feel like there's some older ones that I'm forgetting.
It's like Michael Myers, like Dan Aykroyd, guys like that, like older generation dudes for sure.
Is there like a sneaky Canadian where like people forget that they're Canadian? Like they really are top of the list.
Oh, I'm sure there are. Guys, you're putting me on the spot. I don't know.
A whole country on your shoulders.
Oh, there's so many. Like it's actually nuts. Like there is truly so many. Jim Carrey, like just one of the greatest comedians ever.
Mm-hmm. Alan Thicke could be up there.
Who?
Alan Thicke could be up there too.
Alan Thicke. The truth is, I'm way more at the tip of my tongue. I'm way versed in like Canadian music.
Who'd
be your top for musicians then? You already said Alanis Morissette, so I feel like that might have been you tipping.
Well, everybody knows that, but like, did you know that Feist is Canadian?
No.
Feist is Canadian. Did you know that the rock band Rush was Canadian?
That I knew only because of the movie. I Love You Man. Is it I Love You Man? Right.
Yeah, I Love You Man is also. I think they sit behind the home plate of Blue Jays games frequently.
So that
behind home plate. Yeah.
Also, too, and then there's just like straight up Canadian pride. Like, did you know that Cirque du Soleil comes from Canada?
Oh, I thought it was French. They totally stole that from you.
It was Quebec. It was Montreal.
Gotcha. They totally stole that from you guys. That stinks.
So we'll make it maybe easier then. We'll strip away the people and we'll make you rank these 5 Canadian things. Okay.
Okay.
5 Canadian things. There's one person on this list. Tim Hortons. All Dressed Potato Chips, Milk in a Bag, Degrassi, and Wayne Gretzky.
All right. Tim Hortons, Wayne Gretzky.
Wow. Wayne, he can't even beat Tim. Oh, even Tim Wayne Gretzky so good, can't though. Beat Tim Hortons.
I'm not a hockey person. I love my coffee. I love my donuts. Food first. Hortons, Wayne Gretzky. Fine. Tie, Wayne Gretzky.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay. Wayne Gretzky, Tim Hortons. All dressed potato chips. I would also like to throw in their ketchup chips.
Yeah.
What was the other? Milk in a bag is last.
It was Degrassi was the other one.
Oh, Degrassi. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But you know, I'll put you back on the spot with something we call, will you press the button? And okay. So essentially I'm going to give you an option. You get something good, but something bad will happen if you press this button, essentially. So you press the button and you'll get cast as the new face of a Marvel, Star Wars, some major, major franchise. This is like a multi-year deal, massive, massive thing. But if you press that button, Canada will never win a medal in Olympic hockey ever again. So even if you don't like hockey, the country will lose its stake in the Olympics.
Not even a bronze. Big
thing. Not even medal.
I can't press the button.
That's a good Canadian right there.
I'd get a lot of mad Canadians at me if I press that button.
Okay, so I'll give you another quick hockey one. So Canada hasn't won a Stanley Cup in a very long time, any Canadian team, but a Canadian team will win the Stanley Cup, but Tim Hortons goes out of business.
See, you already telegraphed this one, I feel like.
Yeah.
Guys, I don't know. Then you have a whole lot of Canadians and Americans that are bummed that Tim Hortons not there anymore.
That's true. Uh-huh. That is very true. Because I like Tim Hortons as well.
No. I'm with keeping Tim Hortons alive.
Okay. And the last one, you press the button, you get world peace. But Canada becomes the 51st state in the United States, and it's governed exclusively by Tom Green and no one else.
But well, there's world.
Yes.
Like true world?
True
like
world peace.
Utopian world peace?
Yes.
I'm pressing the button.
There.
Governor Tom Green. 1-3 on button pressing. Incredible. Before we let you go, reminder, Dynagon fight in theaters.
Side note, because if there is actually utopian world peace, it doesn't matter that Canada became the 50th.
It's true.
That's true.
That's a good point. It's a good point.
That's very true. Before we let you go, I'll have you rapid fire this because you said you're a theater purist. You love going to the movies. Reminder, Dine a Gunfight in theaters. Also on demand if you have to. But six movies from you. Could be your six favorite movies. Could be guilty pleasures. Could be something that you wish people would see. Just want six movie suggestions from you.
Six movies. Y tu mamá también.
Oh, so good.
Mm-hmm. That's Dirty Dancing, Mask, Shawshank Redemption, Dead Man Walking.
That was a good quick. See, that's whenever somebody teases themselves as a big theater person, I know the six will get in there very quickly. Mm-hmm. Those are always, it's always a six right off the top. Easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have an ultimate guilty pleasure movie though?
Which one?
Do you have an ultimate guilty pleasure movie? Yeah.
There. That was my Dirty Dancing.
Gotcha.
I used to say, and I'll tie it in off the top, what we said. I used to say my ultimate guilty pleasure was Romeo plus Juliet. But ever since we're a very split podcast. Kendrick does not like the movie.
Not a fan.
I now refuse to call it a guilty pleasure. I just say it's a masterpiece, and that's how I defend it. So. Pleasure. Thank you so much. Again, you can go find this on demand if you can, go to the theaters, get some popcorn. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for joining us. This was a blast.
Thank you guys, that was so fun. Have a great rest of the week. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Enjoy your summer. Yes.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you to Manuel Shrieky for the lovely person. Video games, though. Back. Movie. Some are calling Free Guy about a bank teller called Guy realizes he's a background character in an open world video game called Free City that will soon go offline, played by Ryan Reynolds. Many are calling this. Ken Jack just reappeared on our Zoom call with no shirt on.
I had never had a shirt on, my friend.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. I was like, stunning. Many, and by that I mean me and Ken Jack, are calling this the best video game movie of all time. We'll talk about if that's a fair thing to say, though, because it may not be.
There's qualifiers here, so, right?
There are cool. We will talk about that. But we all did. I mean, true. I guess you'll tell us your thoughts. I gave Free Guy an 83 out of 100. I thought this was a fucking blast of a movie. Great concept. Perfectly executed. Did not go over the top with trying to make it too convoluted or weird or too, you know, based like firmly in video game like lingo or world, but also not dumbing it down enough where it loses like the fun element of this type of video game that it's based on. I liked it quite a bit. Not perfect by any means, but beyond delightful and enjoyable, and also rewatchable, I think, as well. Great voices, great cameos. It was a fun movie. I know I talked about it. I said, when will we be sick of the Ryan Reynolds like type, like that, the character he plays? I wasn't sick of it after this. Liked it quite a bit. A little different, but liked it quite a bit. 83 out of 100 for me. Ken Jack, you.
Yeah, I gave it an 86 out of 100. And remember, I went to the screening for this, and my expectations weren't like crazy high or anything. I'm like, it's a dumb video game movie. If it's like anywhere close to the range of like below Ready Player One or like Detective Pikachu, then I'm happy with that. I wasn't like going into it thinking like this is going to be really, really good. And I really, really enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was super, super funny, incredibly charming. It's like you were saying before, just about the Ryan Reynolds character. He's definitely just playing the Ryan Reynolds guy. And it isn't tired. There's a little bit of heart to it. Definitely not like crazy unique, I would say, or anything like that, where like the storyline's going to blow you away. Like it's relatively paint by numbers in that regard. But I think the execution of it is what makes it so good. Like there's really good humor. Pacing is pretty decent. The special effects look really, really cool. And I don't know. I really liked almost everything about this movie. I think the only maybe thing I would dock points off is like if it was a little bit tighter maybe at some points, or if the general I did like their playoff of Blizzard, but like if they had like a little bit of a better bad, I thought it might have been a little bit better. But like I really like Taika Waititi in this, or like Jokiri in this, Jodie Comer really good in this. I'm like everyone across the board really good, and like a lot of really good little nods for video game fans without being overtly we know you're a video game fan here watching this. And like, for me, I'd watched it with my girlfriend who knows nothing about video games really whatsoever. And she loved it too, which is kind of my barometer too, where I'm like, they did a good sort of balance of video game references that like me as a fan of them will really enjoy, and just regular gen pop comedy that other people will enjoy as well. And to me, I think that makes it a huge, huge success. Again, for me, I think it's the best video game movie ever made, but we'll get into more of like what the qualifier again for that is.
Right. Like, I feel like there's a lot to say about, but there's not a ton to say about the movie for me. And I'm more like the discussion of, is it fair to call it that? Cause the qualifier. But Trill, what did you think? Are you with us?
Yeah, I give it a 75. My only big criticism is I thought the first half of the movie was a lot stronger than the second half. And maybe it's just the setup and all that stuff that I enjoyed more than anything.
It's kind of right. It's the charm, right? Like once you kind of break down those walls of like getting into the world, and yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. But that wasn't enough. It still was good. I don't have any major thoughts beyond what you guys say, but like when I got done watching it, the only thing I could really think of is like, that had the potential to be an awful movie.
Yes.
It like, and it's one of those, like we talk about it before where you can watch a trailer and then you never really know if it's going to be awful or if it's going to be a 75. This is like one of those where it could have just gone like really wrong. And you know, ways they could have done that is they could have like put too many cameos in there. Like the jokes could have been like way more in, I guess, the pandering or lame sort of direction, or it, you know, or just not having a plot that just kind of works with the movie, or just not being fun. But I think in terms of like what they were trying to do, like they pretty much hit the ceiling on this movie in terms of the concept and like the general conceit of it. And I was just really impressed that this ended up being good. I'm like not saying anything about like the folks involved with it, but like normally, first off, like with video game related movies, you don't have a high bar to clear. But second off, it could have just been way in the other direction of, like, you know, when we go back to starting with the Emoji Movie, where it feels like they just put stuff in there and pop culture references, and that's what they lean on. And yeah, like, it had that, but it wasn't a crutch. Like, there was still substance there. There's still a lot of charm, a lot of heart. And honestly, a lot of that goes back to Ryan Reynolds, as we were talking about before, where, like, Ryan Reynolds plays Ryan Reynolds a lot, or like the Hollywood version of Ryan Reynolds. And I think that's okay. Like, he's got a lane, he stays in it, and it actually works, because what he does is he just provides, like, a fun personality for you to root for in a movie. Mm-hmm. And he did it in this one, folks. And yeah, completely agree. The cameos, I thought the cameos were great.
Yes. They were,
and that's what I'm an idiot for cameos.
Spoilers, obviously, the Chris Evans one.
That was unbelievable. The whole, and I was at that screening, the whole fucking theater, like, erupted laughing. And, like, that's such a great moment, right? When you get that communal laugh, that was a great one.
Well, and even Channing Tatum cameos.
Dude, he was so good in it. Yeah, oh, my God.
But breakdancing, he might be, like, I don't know what the sample size is, but, like, going back to This Is the End, where
right.
One of the better cameos ever, like Channing Stadium. Oh boy, I think he just is one of those guys who has a knack for showing up in other people's movies with a very short, like, window on it or whatever, and just do like.
Dominating.
You know, who else? Like, who else can you compare to in that?
Like, Matt
sense?
Damon, I guess. Is
yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, they just. I don't know. The presence is just, like, it's like, one, welcome, but two, it's very fun. And I thought, like, and I know, like, there's some other, like, with, you know, Ninja, and who is the other big streamer?
They had, like, a couple different. They had, like, Pokemon, yeah, or whatever, yeah, her name is, was on that's there, her. And a couple other ones that I wasn't familiar with, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's one, like, I'm like, less excited about that than I am about, like, Chris Evans, but I also, like, that's kind of where you straddle the line between 35-year-olds and, you know, 20-year-olds or whatever. So I always love a good cameo. So it's always nice to get these good cameo movies and just fucking, you know, give me the slop. I don't care. I like it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it's like, it's not cheap if it's done in a fun way that fits the story. And all of them did. Like, they all fit. They all worked. They didn't seem hand-fisted. It didn't seem like, hey, we need this in here to make up for it being bad. It was incredibly enjoyable. It's a fun movie, but here's the big question. This is, like, I know we can talk about the little details on that, but that's not the interesting question. The interesting question is it fair to call it a video game? Like, it's a video game. The movie's about a video game, but is it a video game movie in the sense that the rest of the ones that I'm looking at right now are? And I'll go through our list. I'll run it through really quickly. Bottom to top, if you go on movierankings.net and you sort subgenre, go video game movies. This is how we have it. Last, I'll start last to first. 0 out of 100. This is the average between me and Ken Jack's score. 0 out of 100, Silent Hill Revelation. 1 out of 100, Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Mm-hmm. 4 out of 100, Street Fighter. The Legend. What's the Legend one?
What's that?
Wait, the Legend one? Of Chun-Li. Yeah.
Yeah. Street Fighter was the one with.
That's a top of mind.
Ming-Na Wen and
5 out of 100. Yeah. 9 out of 10. Max Payne. 10 out of 100. Assassin's Creed. Ugh. God, we gave that bad fucking
shit.
Score.
Shit movie.
13 out of 100. Ratchet and Clank, which many of you may not even know exists. 13 out of 100. Warcraft. 20 out of 100. The original Mortal Kombat. 21 out of 100. Pokemon the movie 2000. Even Pokemon, I tend to be like, is it? Like, it is.
The Ash crying one is, that one got me.
22 out of 100, Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within. 27 out of 100, The Jake Gyllenhaal, Prince of Persia. Which
trash movie.
Stunning that movie exists. 34 out of 100, The Wizard.
Yeah. Well, that maybe goes in.
With the free guy, right?
I guess I just gave away my argument with the free guy.
Okay, so hold on. 38 of 100, Pokemon the first movie. 42 out of 100, Ramp. Which, they redid Pokemon the first movie on Netflix in the 3D
did
animation.
They? Yeah, I did.
Completely redone in 3D. Weird.
I did that.
42 of 100, Rampage. 46 out of 100, Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life, which is
that was a banger, dude.
Dude, she went through two of the best action stars ever in that. It was her and Daniel Craig, then her and Gerard Butler. That was sick.
46 out of 100, The New Mortal Kombat. 51 out of 100, Doom. 58 out of 100, Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. And then our top five, Tomb Raider, Alicia Vikander, 61 out of 100. Sonic the Hedgehog, 68 out of 100. Tron Legacy, 71 out of 100, which I think has aged well. Mm-hmm. It's not good. It's not great at all. It's very average. 71 out of 100, the original Tron, and then 72 out of 100, Pokemon Detective Pikachu. Which I think that's a little more video game based than I think like the regular ones, because it is truly, truly, I mean, I guess they're all based on games, but whatever. I don't know if you can really put this one in there. Like it's like a lot of video games, but the problem with these is, for the most part, they're based off of an actual story and game people know, and it boxes it in to make it more difficult at its success.
And I think that's, in my mind, that's what a video game movie is to me. It's a movie based off of an actual video game property or combinations of said properties.
Yeah. But so like if there was like a biopic based off of like Blizzard or whatever, because like even this whole movie, like the Taika Waititi Corporation was based off of, is what, Avalanche
Blizzard
or something?
Blizzard was born in 1981.
Like this is based off of Blizzard. Like that's what they're making fun of. And like, it is a video game movie in the sense that it is a movie based off of a video game. And like, in that sense, I think it's the best movie where like it is based in a video game, I guess, or video game themed, I guess. It's the best video game themed movie of all time. If you're considering the actual term video game movie to be just a movie that is based off of an existing video game, then it's not. Then I think the answer to that would be Detective Pikachu. But either way, I think the thing we're looking for here is the fact that Ryan Reynolds is essentially the one man wrecking crew of bringing back the video game movie genre, because he's now made the best movie in both of these subgenres.
Yeah, I just...
Yeah, I actually didn't even think about that.
I just don't think you can call this a video game movie. I know that's what you were saying.
They're in a video game. I mean, the whole fucking movie takes place in a video game.
So how do you differentiate this from
But so is Ready Player One, and we didn't. At no point did we call Ready Player One a video game movie.
But that is also
that's a very good point.
It's just this was more like, this was more declaredly. Is that a good one? I'll use that word.
Yeah, that's actually
based off the traditional foundations of what we consider a video game. But Ready Player One is basically like, it's basically a video game. It's the future version of a video game in a secondary life. It's almost like an MMRPG or MMORPG. I always struggle with that one.
Multiplayer online role play game.
I get what you're saying, but I think for like the sanctity of the video game movie argument, like you just have to keep video game movies. And like that definition are like movies based off of like actual video game properties. And the reason they're so bad is because typically video game properties don't have movie caliber stories, or they're done in a way that they just cannot translate well over to the screen. And even if they do have a movie caliber story, because like Red Dead Redemption 2 maybe has a movie caliber story in it. Good luck making a movie out of that.
Well, The Last of Us is being made into a long form series, whatever that's worth. But I think the bigger thing is it just comes down to semantics, right?
Absolutely. We're just being little pricks about this.
Yeah, exactly. We're being assholes about it. Yeah. So like, I do think that video, I do think that the whole word video game or video game movie is broader than maybe we're giving credit. And like, maybe there should be two subgenres within video game movies where it's like movies based off video games and video game themed movies. But I don't know. It really just depends on how you look at it.
I do think the trump card is what you said. And it's weird that we don't consider it that way. Maybe because it's so much of it is based in the real world too. But really, like, if you're going to call this a video game movie, you have to call Ready Player One a video game movie.
I think I would call Ready Player One a video game movie. I'll say that. I think I would call it that. The whole thing's in a video game.
I would make the argument that Ready Player One, if you do want to call it a video game movie, is more of a video game movie than Free Guy is. Because Ready Player One actually has video game characters in it. You have the Battletoads there.
They definitely use some video game stuff.
That's
in
the
this.
One you dropped.
That's the one, only one I can really remember.
There's like a trillion different ones in that. Yeah. I do want to note another thing about Free Guy before I forget is I do think that the use of the song Fantasy, Mariah Carey, was awesome. I think that's a great, great complimentary like main track for this movie, and it fit perfectly.
Yeah, it's a fun song.
It is. It's such a fun song. Such a fucking fun song.
Very fun.
It fits in with Ryan Reynolds like on screen vibe too.
Yes, greed. It's just like that definitely meshed very, very well. I'm just trying to think of like other things, like the smaller things I liked about this movie. The teabagging I thought was funny. The like stuff in the background that happened where it's like a guy running into a wall and like clipping through it and shit, I thought was very funny. Like little tiny things that are, again, maybe infrared for people that don't get it. But I think at the end of the day, there's so few moments where like I'm laughing out loud at something that the person sitting next to me isn't, you know what I mean? And I think that's, again, success. It's so much more digestible for a mainstream movie fan, with the exception of a few things like Ninja or Pokimane or whatever being in there.
Pokimane.
That's her name, is it not?
Pokimane. Yeah. Okay. Now I'm just still caught up on the video game movie discussion. The movie was good. Okay. I'm not offering a whole lot of thoughts in there, because there's not a whole lot of thoughts to be had other than the fact that it's good. But a thought to be had is, Pixel's a video game movie.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It has to be. Yeah.
Because Pixels is more of a video game movie than Ready Player One is. I'm trying to, maybe it's not a definitive 0-1 scale, but maybe it's on like, you know, Pixels is along the curve.
I have a question for you.
In there, and then Josh Gad's character has sex with Q-Bert, has a kid, Q-Bert, and that makes it
a video game movie.
Yeah.
I do have a general question that I don't know if you guys can answer, and it is, how did they do the jacked free guy? I couldn't tell. It definitely wasn't a muscle suit, but like the CGI was so flawless that like I couldn't even tell. I kept like, while watching it, I was like, I can't tell if this is a very advanced muscle suit or like a CGI thing, because it was grafted, I guess, so well onto the body.
It probably, yeah, I don't know.
Cause like their muscles were moving and like the veins were like there and shit. And like,
well, it has
to be
CGI then. I don't think I feel like it'd be more affordable to do CGI than create like a suit of throbbing veins.
They kind of did that in the last Bill and Ted movie.
Make that throbbing vein suit?
Yeah. They did that in the last Bill and Ted one. And I think it looked
that great
too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know, but it looked great on that guy. And that was also a very funny character where it's just like, insert line here. Insert code here. I thought that was good. There's a lot of very funny small things in this.
High marks from us, though. 75 from Trill. More than I thought. I mean, I didn't think it would be bad, but I was like, I don't know if I'll love it. 83 from me, 86 from Ken Jack. Beckett later on in the week. That's on Netflix with John David Washington.
Beckett's interesting.
There's a bunch of things he could do, but you give a big name actor and you put him on Netflix, I'm going to have to pick that over Don't Breathe 2.
Yeah. We should do Paper Tigers eventually. That's also on Netflix. That was a fun movie.
Don't Breathe 2 might be more interesting.
That's true.
The discourse.
We could do
is.
Both. We could do the classic double movie.
We could do that. Wait, yeah, the Paper Tiger or the White Tiger?
The Paper Tiger. So you're thinking of the Indian one. This one is based in LA or something.
White Tiger was a very enjoyable movie, though.
Yeah, White Tiger is good. Yeah.
25 of the year for me. Yeah.
That was a good solid flick. But Paper Tigers is like an indie one. That was really good on Netflix.
Anything else?
No, I'm gonna play Red Dead and maybe still keep a shirt off.
I went, Jeff, did you go to the bathroom at all during this movie?
During Free Guy?
Yeah.
No, why?
I did. And I stood up in theater. I said, guess I'm the pee guy.
It was worth it. That was a good payoff to end the pod right there.
Hey, everybody, hold on.
Remember when you guys iced me out on Cry Nacho? I should have
Cry Nacho was
right
funny.
There.
Cry Nacho was funny.
I feel like we gave you the proper amount of appreciation.
No, you iced me out. You iced me out.
I don't think so. I think when I ice out, it's like a begrudging respect for the joke. Like if I don't all out groan and move on, like if I give it time, that's a compliment.
All right, I'm gonna keep that in mind next time you make a joke.
Speaking of things people want to hear, by the way, if we get asked all the time, how'd the podcast start? And then tell the T-Lizard story. If you want to hear the first time I've ever done a full, in-depth breakdown, the time I called Kermit the Frog a lizard on Good Morning America, and why without doing that, we probably would not have this podcast.
It's true.
KFC Radio, Kevin Clancy Show. Just search Behind the Blog on YouTube. Go watch on YouTube. I did an interview. I talked about my like path to Barfield, but I talked about it in depth for the time I've ever talked about it. Talked about how due to the odd chain of command in terms of who I answered to it at ABC, technically my boss's boss's boss saw it, and that person's boss is Bob Iger. So it was a dangerous moment. Trill said, "Are you gonna get fired?" That's when I didn't really know Trill. It's a wild story. It's a stupid story. But you can go here. I've never talked that in depth about it. Not that I didn't want to. I just didn't really care. But people seem to enjoy it. So
speaking of podcast lore, Trill, can we post the fisherman sweater picture as long as I send it in the group to put the smocking head over it? People have been asking forever.
Not yet, but let's do it right before I step down.
Okay.
That's the parting gift.
Okay.
That's
the parting.
The parting shot. All right. That's it. We'll do two movies. We'll do Beckett and we'll do Don't Breathe 2. Don't Breathe 2. I feel like Don't Breathe 2. That sounds weird.
Don't Breathe also.
Yeah, Don't Breathe as well.
Don't hear. I know just what you're thinking.
That should be in the sequel. Should have been a guy that's deaf. Like, logically speaking, you take away a different sense in each movie of this franchise. Just how it should work. Don't feel.
Why they pay the big bucks.
Don't smell.
Yeah. Don't smell.
I mean, it'd be amazing. Tell me that wouldn't be an amazing movie.
Don't smell.
Starring the slate of Hollywood celebrities that have come out in recent weeks and talk about not bathing.
It's I don't know how it works, but it stars Trill Ballins after he eats one whole slice of white bread.
That's it. For Ken, Jack, and Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office. Baby, do you want to be mine? Maybe we can see the seaside. Wanna kick it where you are. I can't even lie. Give it to me with a bullseye. It hurts, I wanna do that. Girl, I wanna be with you. Summer evening.